Hello and welcome to the Whiteboard Rugby Podcast. And as usual, I'm joined by the King of Bedford himself, Sam Roberts.
As usual bit got me worried. There was a little residue of if only there was someone slightly better than Sam. But the King of Bedford picked me back up, and suddenly I feel good again. So that's you really took me on a roller coaster ride in that intro. I liked it. Thank you.
In just a few words, it's like poetry, Sam.
You take me down and you bring me back up, I think Al Pacino once said, or something along those lines. Anyway, how are you, Sam? Are you well?
I'm very well. We've had quite the week, haven't we, Sam? Maybe we tease who it is at the end, but there's someone you'll definitely want to listen to on Monday.
Definitely want to listen to. Arguably one of the better episodes we've done, and we've done a few good ones. I mean, let me tell you, Sam Lana, we have done a few very, very good ones. But this guy was particularly good. And actually, what we'll talk about in today's show is going to lead you neatly towards that reward. So stay tuned. It should be absolutely brilliant. What else are we going to talk about today, Mr. L?
We're going to briefly discuss the Premiership. I really enjoyed, we did this at the start of the year before the Premiership began, a little kind of a preview where we just asked each other a couple of questions. And we're going to do the same thing in the first 5 minutes before we jump into the meat of the episode later.
Does this involve me remembering what those questions were?
I think they can be different. I think, in fact, the questions I've got for you are different. So I think
good, because otherwise
we're safe.
Go on then.
This would be a very difficult podcast if we had to remember stuff.
What have you got for me? I think I know remember what one of my questions was, but carry on. Go on. What have you got for me?
Okay. So first question is, I'd say there's been two really disappointing teams so far: Exeter and Gloucester. Yeah. Which are you most positive about as we look ahead to the next? Okay, yeah.
Because of the way that they're trying to play. I agree with you in a sense that obviously they've had their hides tanned on a couple of occasions, especially quite frustratingly recently. But I like the way they're trying to play. I like the way they're trying to get there. I think there's a lot of very good plus points to hang on to with Gloucester. I really do. I don't know whether they'll make it all come together and make it work, but I just quite like that. Exeter, I'm just unsure of at the moment as to where they are and what they're doing, and they just look a little lacking in a number of different key areas. So that's my take on it. Yours? What are you feeling?
I would agree with you. I think I'm less concerned about Exeter. I think some of their recent performances, so just to give you an idea, the four games they played so far, lost to Leicester by 3 points, lost to Northampton by 6 points, quite a heavy loss to Saracens by 15 points, and then lost to Bristol by 5 points. So they're not quite coin tosses, but you could easily have seen them go two wins, two losses, which would then put them up in the melee with Sale, Harlequins, Northampton. Sale have got 3 wins, but that kind of mid-table mediocrity. So I would expect them to win tomorrow night against the Falcons, that could kickstart something.
Yeah, and I was talking to the Harlequins players ahead of their game against Saracens, which seems to have potentially given them a real fillip this season. And there isn't a huge amount in it. And as you say, these games, yes, there is missing something down at Exeter in terms of potentially the yardstick that we are used to with the Exeter Chiefs, with everything that they've gone before. But you're right, it isn't a huge amount that they're missing. There's something, but it isn't quite missing. And it could click at any stage, and they could go on a run, put 3, 4, 5 victories together, and everything is different. So, yeah, I think you're right. The Premiership is tight as a nun's chuff. I can't believe I've just.
Are you proud of yourself for that one, sir?
No, I'm not. I'm so sorry. there are people who have heard that and probably have switched off. I'm sorry about that. Carry on.
What's your question?
Oh, my question was, my original question was about underestimating Saracens. So many people had got this table out and gone, oh, I think they're going to be down here. Saracens are very good, aren't they? And they're always going to be very, very good. And the level of depth that they have across the board in all facets of what they're doing, from S&C to the way that the club works, to the way that the coaches manage to find talent, nurture talent, develop talent, the way that they are together as a team, I think they're still the team for many to mark yourself against and work out where you are, as Harlequins did last Sunday. Harlequins Saracens have a really strong growing dislike for each other. I love it. I think sport needs more of this sort of real chagrin, this real sort of without being descriptive about some of the phrases that were used down on Sunday, they really don't like each other. And I kind of liked it. And for Quins, they managed to harness it. They managed to put it into themselves rather than kind of expel it out. They took it in and they tackled so hard, so well. They moved so expertly across the pitch, covered everything. They worked so hard against Saracens, the team who are known for outworking everyone. They outworked them and they beat them. And I was so pleased for Harlequins, because it wasn't really a Harlequins victory. We're used to a little bit more swashbuckle from them. We're used to a little bit more, you know, razzmatazz, and we actually got a real grafter, a real chunk of hardness that they perhaps hadn't found, certainly not this season, and it kind of lit something within them. Maybe they need to play Saracens every week to get that angry. But you know, it was really, really interesting to see Quins find that and pull off what I thought was an excellent display. Did you see the game on TV?
I did. I saw the second half. Yeah, I thought they were exceptional.
Great test match. It was almost a test match. Say, it was that sort of intensity.
It really was. I would say, just a kind of a call out, I really think Jarrod Evans is turning into an elite operator in the Premiership. I mean, he's obviously going to struggle, I think, to unseat Marcus Smith as 10. However, Smith, you know, obviously his first game back, he was put to fullback to allow Jarrod Evans to continue at 10. So I really am impressed by what Evans is doing. And I do think, I mean, overall, Saracens have been the better side, but it's so difficult. Yeah. That table is so tight that it's impossible to know just based off one game. I mean, if you watch the Gloucester-Bristol game, you think Gloucester were going to take home the trophy there and then, but it can change so quickly.
Yeah, I think it's summed up in the weirdness of the fact that, you know, Harlequin's next game is against Bath, who have lost against Bristol. And Saracens' next game is against Bristol, who lost against Gloucester, and so that kind of tells you where this league is. It's all over the place. It's anyone's. Will we know by Christmas? Maybe not even by Christmas. Maybe not even by February will this table have sorted itself out. It is going to be a stonker. Absolutely, 100%. It's delivering, definitely.
It really is. Should we talk Kiwis?
Yeah, we shall. This was so difficult. Did you find yourself going down rabbit holes?
Well, I did. So at first, I was struggling to think of people. And then as soon as I picked a position, so I guess just for listeners, we're going to give you our 15 of Kiwis abroad. Similar to the players that made us fall in love with rugby. Sam's going to take the odd numbers this time. I'm going to take the evens. But I really found that I was looking at players in particular positions. I couldn't think of anyone. And then as soon as I started looking, there was about 500 names that I could have put in there. And whittling those down was almost impossible.
It was. But brilliant. Some absolutely brilliant names coming out and reminding you of the influence of New Zealand, not just in the British Isles and Ireland. The more I scratched around at Ireland, the more I realised just how influential the Kiwis have been in some of their great, great sides coming through. Some really key players. But Wales have also benefited, England as well, Scotland as well. So it was really lovely to see the wave of influence that New Zealand rugby has had, you know, across the globe, and it continues to do so. So I thought it was really, really good. Do you want me to start with the front row? This was pretty easy for me. In a sense, okay. One and three. I didn't really have any arguments in my head. Number one is Sione Tonga-Weha. Absolutely, yeah. Undisputed. And just to caveat this as well for the listeners, I don't know how you decided, Sam, but I put myself in the mind of the fans of the clubs that these people played for, and how important they were for those clubs, you know, in terms of, because obviously some really good players have come over from New Zealand and haven't really played enough or long enough or made enough of an indentation. Despite the fact that they had a wonderful, wonderful career, they haven't really impressed themselves on that fan base. So that was my, were you the same? Were you kind of looking at it from a fan, you know, the way that they work with fans?
Yeah, so it was a bit of a mixed bag of players I just genuinely loved, and people that I felt left a huge mark on on the clubs that they were long-term residents at. So I think that was kind of a mixed bag there of what I was looking for.
Yeah, number one, Sione Tonga-Weha came across from New Zealand, was completely and utterly out of shape when he arrived at Bedford, spent a couple of years at Bedford, Saints got hold of him, transformed him. The hands on the man, he had hands like a surgeon. He was so, so good with his hands. He was massive, but a brilliant exponent. They loved him. They called him Tiny up at Franklin's Gardens, because every fan loves a bit of irony. And, you know, he was brilliant. Absolutely fantastic. And easily the standout man for me at Loosehead, number one. Sione Tonga-Weha.
Perfect. I'm going to go for someone who I will put in the Mike Brown camp of people I absolutely hated and now have loved as they've kind of got older. It's Dylan Hartley.
Yeah.
Who I just thought was immense, both for England and for Saints for so many years. He's the kind of guy that it took me a long time to realise he was even a Kiwi, really, because he just felt such a English player, really. But, you know, given how long he was here, given the mark he's left on both club and country, I think it's very hard to look past him at hooker.
I'd agree with you. And there's a lovely footnote as well, because we're not going to mention him. But one of the reasons Dylan Hartley came over to the UK was a chap called Paul Tupai, who played at Northampton as well, then played at Bedford for a long time. An incredible individual. Look up Paul Tupai. Had two careers, one career down in New Zealand, played for 10, 12 years down in New Zealand, then came up to the North, played another 10, 12 years up in the North. Extraordinary individual. And he basically took Dylan Hartley under his wing. He knew his dad. And Dylan needed someone just to steady the ship when he came over. And another Kiwi played that sort of fatherly, paternal role. It's a great, great story, that. So, again, and another chance to talk about another fabulous New Zealander. Although we're just talking about Saints at the moment, aren't we? We've got Sione Dylan.
We are.
Let's change that.
Are you going to move us away?
I am going to move us away. Three, again, there were some names that came up here. There were some names that had done very well in New Zealand rugby, but didn't quite do the job and didn't quite deliver on their names in British rugby and Irish rugby. But one guy stood out above the rest, a hero at Ulster, an absolute hero at Bristol and Gloucester, John Afoa. What a player that man was. Absolutely brilliant. Loved him. Loved the interactions that I occasionally, very, very occasionally had with him. He was a guy who just made you feel good about yourself. And I understand, an absolute treat to play with. So yeah, wonderful, wonderful rugby player, and easily number three for me as an import in John Afoa.
Yeah, great shout. I think he was one of the early exponents of being actually able to pass a ball and play front row. I always kind of think back to him as one of those proper ball playing front rows, which, you know, we maybe don't have, well, we didn't have so much of in the past.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. And again, you know, just when you looked at him as well, he just looked as though he was loving life, wasn't he? Whatever. I mean, a tight head's not an easy place to love life, but he did. He loved it. He absolutely enjoyed his rugby. So definitely. Big John, in at three.
So number four, we're crossing the border, or very close to we're going to Wales, basically, is what I'm saying.
That was so close to being Partridge.
It was. I was stumbling around looking for the link and thought, let's just cut our losses. It's Paul Tito, who played for Cardiff when they were the Blues, played for Cardiff Blues. I know that's controversial, but he did play for Cardiff Blues. And he was exceptional. If people don't remember him, he was...
How can you not remember Paul Tito?
Oh, exactly. He had this shock of ginger hair. He looked... if you didn't see the rest of his body, you would not imagine that he was one of the best seconds that we've ever seen in Wales. Certainly the best imported seconds we've seen in Wales. He was exceptional. He was literally there for some of the Cardiff's best moments in that kind of mid to late 2000s. That was the time when I was watching a lot of Cardiff rugby. I would visit my family in Caerphilly, and we predominantly going watch Cardiff. He was great. He was such a good player, powerful, amazing in the line out. I think he then kind of moved into coaching. I'm not sure where he is now, but he was such a good player and just, you know, brought so much of that over from New Zealand. But I would also say that he was. We often maybe have this idea of New Zealanders as amazing hands, and I think he really typified that work rate of a world class second row.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. And again, that tips into, again, we'll throw it forward to what's coming on the Blind Side, released on Monday. There was, and when you go through this list, you do come up against New Zealand names in Wales. And there was, they found a brethren, they found a place in Wales, in Welsh rugby, which really fit them, because New Zealand and Wales are like, you know, brothers from another mother. They really do sort of sit well next to each other. And there's a guy who definitely benefited from everything that Wales did that was similar to the way that New Zealand thought about their rugby, most definitely. My number five is actually, I loved this guy. And anyone who was certainly a Sale Sharks fan is going to be nodding along here. Bryn Evans had a Welsh name, but was very firmly a New Zealander. And he was titanic for them. He really did, again, a lot of the stuff that people didn't see, a lot of the gluing together of all the bits and pieces, fulcrum at line-out time, brilliant up in the air, secured so much, made everything, was a little bit of an enforcer, was a really, really good signing for Sale, and made a lot of appearances for them, and is still much, much loved up in that part of the world. We haven't mentioned Brad Thorne, and Brad Thorne kind of, I mean, what an influence Brad Thorne was for Leinster and indeed Leicester at the ripe old age that he came across. But for me, I wanted to mention Bryn Evans because he was another really good example of someone who completely and utterly threw themselves, not in just into the club, but into the community as well, and did so many good things. So, yeah, number five, Bryn Evans for me.
Perfect. Great shout. Number six, we're staying in terms of Welsh names. We're staying around that area, but we're going to go for Marty Holler. He was over the Ospreys, and he would have been maybe just after the Ospreys Galacticos, though still in that kind of area. I was looking at some pictures of him as I was pulling together this list. He is entirely a rectangular man. He is exceptional. And I think he typified that really exciting period of Ospreys rugby. I think, you know, we had Lance Bradley on earlier in one of the Blindside editions. I think he would say that excitement is coming back, and I agreed with him to a certain extent. But I think, you know, Marty Holler and that Ospreys team, when you watch them, you really felt like you were watching maybe not the absolute best club side in the world, but certainly one of the most kind of put together of all the talented players that they had. Marty Holler was in some ways, he was just the hard-working center of that, which allowed the fancy boys, the James Hooks, the Shane Williamses, to operate around him. And I just thought he was an excellent player. He was just so solid, and he would hit some of his tackles that he made were you know, frightening. They would kind of keep you up at night. The idea that might be you, that he was absolutely destroying your tackle. So he I thought he was wonderful.
Yeah, I agree with you. He was kind of in my conversation as regards Seven as well, you know, operating on both sides and very accomplished on both sides of the open side and blind side. I'm glad you went for it at six because I didn't pick him at seven. John Hardy is there in the conversation, you know, Scotland, great, and New Zealand born. Again, typifying that absolutely nugget-like, teak-like appeal to rugby. Brendan O'Connor was very good at Leicester Tigers. There's a name that many people will have forgotten, but he was relentless in the way he went about his business. But he's not my number seven. Blair Cowan is. London Irish, oh, Worcester, yes. Cornish Pirates as well. Got to get the championship in there. And I thought he was a fantastic servant. Again, wonderfully, typically New Zealand, so open, so honest, so kind, and then hard as nails on the pitch and a really good exponent in the seven. So Blair Cowan gets the nod at seven.
That is a great... I actually watched him play against Richmond, I think it was, in a preseason game. And I had one of the worst colds I think I've ever had. Before I'd make the trip there anyway. Quickly regretted it because it was a very hot day and, you know, that kind of miserable feeling of just head cold on a hot day. But just watching him, he was just so good. And that would have been towards the end of his career. But he was just so good. And he bounced off to the MLR, I think, as well at the Twizyang. Yep. So he would have played alongside Mangungu at the Legion, which is
I was going to say he did go over there. Yeah, some really good exponents of back row play, definitely. Who did you go for at number eight? I was obviously, this isn't my number, but I was intrigued. What did you go with number eight?
So I went for Thomas Waldrum. Thomas is Anthony. Okay. Yeah, so I would say he really changed how the game was played. Mm-hmm. You know, before him, far more tries came from backs, like a much higher percentage of tries came from backs. With his successes, those, I think it was three seasons where he was either first or second in the Premiership try scoring. And he was hitching himself to the back of that unstoppable Chiefs maul. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I think... In some ways, perhaps people might remember him as in that difficult time England had where they were struggling and there was, it felt like a bit more kind of focus on weight rather than skill in some ways in that English back there. But for Exeter, I just think he was just one of those unstoppable players. In a similar, obviously different position, but a similar way to Johnny Matthews at the Warriors now. Just that unbelievable try scoring record. But it's just incredible. He was changing the face of the game, really.
Yeah, no, really, really good shout. Another player who, in a way, sort of became English and more English in a sense, the way that he played the game and when he certainly became good and effective. You know, we really latched on to him in a big way. Nine behind him. There were quite a few of these. Quite a few of really good. Exponents. I have to, of course, with you on the show, I have to mention Justin Marshall, who played so many different places, but for your beloved Leeds Tykes as well. Khan Fotualihi fits into that bracket as well. Willie Hines obviously made a huge impression down at Gloucester. But I couldn't really ignore the work of, he played over 100 games for two Irish provinces. Isaac Boss was really very, very good for Ulster and for Leinster for a number of years. And a guy, again, who just embodied everything that was A, nine, and B, New Zealander. And I thought, I really, you know, any team that had him in, Boss by name, Boss by nature, it was kind of leading the charge in that sort of way that only New Zealanders can, with that complete and utter dedication to the cause and real skill level. So yeah, for me, I thought about doing Justin Marshall just for you, but Isaac Boss gets the nod.
Some of those games I forgot. Obviously, I knew I could bring Justin Marshall to mind. Yeah, Khan Fotualihi and Willie Hines. Just really, it's been a packed position that's come over from the All Blacks.
Yeah, go on then.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily put him in the mix, but Pili Weepu, you know, that yeah. kind of, it was a very difficult time for Lungan Welsh, but the fact that he came over to the UK struggled, but you know, the fact that that was a draw was pretty exceptional.
Yeah, and was it Byron Kelleher? Did he have time?
Yes.
Who did he play for?
I don't know. I'm gonna be checking. I'm gonna Google
Don't worry. That's just a name that came up. There were quite a few really good nines.
French, I think he was.
Oh, was he French? Was he? Didn't play in
I
the
think
UK.
It was only France. Yes, Toulouse and Stéphancey, he was at.
Okay, but there you go. My mistake. Go on then. Number 10. This is always of interest. Usually the first name on the team sheet, Sam Lana, number 10.
Yeah, so, well, this guy could and did play in a lot of different positions, but I put him in this one, partly in the hope that you were choose someone else in one of his other potential positions, positions you could play. Guy I've met, a very lovely guy, Jimmy Gopoff.
Yes. I love it. Yes, I hope you're going to say that. Very good. What a man. What a man.
Exceptional. I mean, he's still going. I think he's 42 and he's still knocking it over for Provence. He had extended periods of time with Newcastle, with Leinster. He had a shorter spell with Leicester as well.
Just Wasps as well. Massive for Wasps.
Just an incredibly talented player. I remember someone describing him as the best leader of the game they'd ever seen. And you can kind of tell that he was 10, 12, occasionally 15. He was in those core positions where he could just boss everything. And I remember meeting him and he's probably my size, and I'm not particularly big, and thinking, oh, well, maybe I misremembered him as an elite-level defender. But you go back and you look and you think he was brilliant. He was just consistently across the board, absolutely fantastic player. So he slots in there. There's leading that beautiful pack around the pitch.
Yeah, indeed. And going into 11, you start to worry, of course, because people will write in saying, well, he's not a left winger, he was a right winger. And it was a bit difficult to try, because, you know, it's one of those different things. But the guy I went for, again, you know, and Isaac Boss was a legend of Irish rugby, but this guy has become almost synonymous with the province that I was looking at. I did toy with the idea of Scott Hamilton up at Leicester, who played over 140 games for Leicester. He was a really, really good player. Rico Gear came into things as well. But this guy, I don't think you can really argue with it. James Lowe for Leinster, absolutely brilliant product, and has just always been good. Just always is able to pull things out when absolutely necessary and just comes up with the goods time after time after time. What a brilliant player. I really, really enjoy watching James Lowe do his stuff.
Yeah, he is extraordinary. He's one of those players that he's not one of those absolute dynamite finishers that, you know, in the mold of the kind of Christian Wade, he always seems like someone who could be dropped. Yeah. And then you see him play and you think there's just something's happening there. There's something going on. I'm not sure what it is, but there's something that makes him absolutely extraordinary.
Doesn't look like an out-and-out winger, does he? He doesn't have the appearance of someone. He looks like a utility back who's just been slung in there just because there's nowhere else to put him. And then all of a sudden, he's the best finisher, the best brain, the best seer of space. He's absolutely superb.
Yeah. So, 12. If I was Irish, I'd be saying the word Bungiaki. This moment in time. But I'm not Irish, and so I'm saying the words Hadley Parks,
who
got involved in the Welsh setup quite late in his career, but was just brilliant. He was, in my view, he's probably the most naturally gifted player Wales have had in maybe 10 years. I just think he was exceptional. The skill that he had was incredible. And he was one of those guys who almost never had a bad game. He wasn't always lightning, but he just never had that game where you think, oh God, we need to drop him for the next match. He was just consistently brilliant. And for Scarlets as well, obviously that crossover helps him get into the squad. But for Scarlets as well, I thought he was just brilliant. He was just such a brilliant player. And he was at the heart of our greatest seasons ever, really, in the last few years.
paging Paul Williams on Twitter. Massive man crush on Hadley Parks, and you can kind of excuse it. You can kind of see why.
Oh God, yeah.
Partnering him at 13, this was a little bit more tricky because, again, just trying to find someone to sort of operate in that channel and only that channel. Because I mean, I did want to mention, and this guy probably would sit at 12 rather than 13, was Inga Tuigamala. What a human being he was for Newcastle Falcons. Extraordinary. Casey Laulala is definitely in the conversation. I went for Regan King, which I know you'll appreciate.
Yes.
What a ball player. What an unbelievable mind of reading and seeing and doing what he needed to do with the ball before anyone else had realized where it was and what was going on. He was brilliant, absolutely extraordinary talent. And that 12-13 partnership of Hadley Parks and Regan King is definitely world-class, I would say.
Oh, it's taking me back. I actually saw Regan King when he was playing for Jersey, I think it was. So this would be the last couple of years of his career. And against London Welsh, and it really was exceptional seeing him up close. I just think there's something about players of that caliber playing in smaller grounds that just is something I think unique to rugby. That's a great shout. He was exceptional.
Yep. Very, very good. Come on then, on the right wing, who we got? Two more left.
Yeah, I'm jumping over the sea. Doug Howlett. Who made a big impact for Munster. I honestly think one of the videos I've watched most is that Munster hacker against the New Zealand hacker when they played each other in, when would that be? Maybe 2011. I could be completely out there with the year. But there's three Munster Kiwis who step out from the line and go head-to-head with the New Zealand team. But Doug Howlett, I mean, there's just something about him. I thought he was a wonderful player.
And I think also he actually is a nice nod to a player who, because a lot of the other names, a vast majority of the names, in fact, nearly all of the other names that we've mentioned tonight, didn't quite have the All Black career before they came over and then delivered on that All Black career in Europe. And Doug Howlett was definitely one of those. And there are plenty of examples of people who had really good All Black careers who came over and didn't quite deliver. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
And he is one of those, 100%. Can't disagree with that. And 15, rounding off a back line, which quite frankly could probably be any other back line in the world at the moment, is Charles Piatau. I could have gone Ben Blair just for old time's sake because I love that Cardiff shirt that he used to wear. Isa Nasewa, of course, but we've got Jason Woodward, of course, played exceptionally well for Bristol and Gloucester. But what was there anyone in their pomp? Was there anyone like Charles Piatau? I mean, we had a guy on who knows his rugby, and he mentioned Charles Piatau as potentially one of the players, the best players that he ever played against. So he has to get into this team. Starred for Ulster, of course, starred for Wasp, starred for Bristol, starred anywhere he went. What a player Charlie Piatau was. Absolutely extraordinary. What a team. What a team.
That is a hell of a team. I'll run through this team now. The one honorable mention, I mentioned Jimmy Gopper, that there was someone else who I'd like, who hopefully would fit in. He hasn't fitted in, but Bruce Lehane.
Yeah.
I just want to put him as an honourable mention because he was one of my early rugby crushes, really. I thought he was absolutely just brilliant. He's just such a good player and he could play anywhere. You know, he really was like one of those old guys who plays in the vets team who could rock up and play at one, he could play at eight, he could play at 15, he'll just do the job. So, but yeah, I think we've got a hell of a team. So, from 1 to 15, my preferred method of naming a team, Sione Tongawea at 1, Dylan Hartley, 2, John Afoa, 3, Paul Tito and Bryn Evans in the second row, Marty Holler, Blair Cowan, Thomas Waldrum in the back row. Our 9 and 10 pair are Isaac Boss and Jimmy Gopoff. We've got James Lowe and Doug Howlett on the wings, Hadley Parks and Regan King, the Scarlet Expresses in the centres, and Charles Piatau at fullback.
Put a side together that beats that side. You can't. It's got everything. It's got every area of the game covered. And what a credit to that nation of New Zealand that they have produced the sides that they have produced at international level, and then produced the sides like that for club rugby in the Northern Hemisphere. Sorry, not just in the Northern Hemisphere, in Britain and Ireland. Absolutely brilliant. What a good episode that was, Sam Lana. Wasn't that good? Oh, now, lovely. Tell us why we did that. Why did we do that, Sam Lana?
Well, it's because on Monday, you will be listening to Israel Dagg on The Blind Side, who gave us the usual half hour, and we pulled out some fascinating tidbits. I'd say there's stuff in there that no one's heard before.
Yeah, scoops there are.
There are scoops. Just a genuinely lovely man, Sam. I thought he was fascinating.
You've got to listen to that. I know his name alone will bring in people, but there's a lot of people who already listen to this Whiteboard Rugby podcast, and this is your reward. It's absolutely stunning. What an open and honest conversation he had. He talks about his struggles. He talks about the difficulties. He talks about his highs. He talks about coming over to this country, his love that he has for the game of rugby still, and his new career. Absolutely brilliant. Well done, Sam Lana. Another stunning episode. Thank you very much. I'm sure I'll see you again very soon. But for now, that has been the Whiteboard Rugby Podcast.